Welcome to Wine for Normal People, the podcast for people who like wine, but not the snobbery that goes with it. I'm your host, Elizabeth Schneider, author of the Wine for Normal People book and certified wine dork. Have you been to my go-to source for the best selection of interesting wines you can't find locally? WineAccess.com, rated the best wine club by New York Times Wirecutter, and that was even before the Wine Access Wine for Normal People Club was live. You got to go to WineAccess.com/normal. Check out my wine club, $150 for 6 bottles 4 times a year. And as an insider tip, I just heard that Wine Access has bottles left from the last shipment. You can still join the wine club and get the most recent shipment. Don't miss out. Check out my social media or my Patreon page for more details. Now let's get to the show. So this week in the U.S., it is tax season, and it is very stressful. And either you're paying or you're getting a refund, but a lot of people are getting a refund with tax season. And maybe if you're not getting a refund and you're like me and you have to pay into the system because you're an entrepreneur, at least you can have a bottle of wine to celebrate the fact that you have another year before you have to go through the hell that is the U.S. tax system. I think that if you do get a refund, like many of you do, and you have a little bit of extra change rattling around, it's time to splurge on wine. Some people love to buy shoes. I know a lot of you like shoes also, but like some people like shoes, some people like electronics, some people like, we like wine, and we should be spending our extra change on wine. I was talking to my dad about this, and he was like, you know what? I spend my money on watches and I really like pens. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, what do you have for your bottle of wine? You just spend money on wine. I was like, I have great memories and I have times that I've spent with people and nights and all of this head full of great stuff that is not material, but it is such a wonderful experience. So that is how I look at it. I would rather have a great experience with a really good friend enjoying a bottle of wine than have a pair of shoes that likely are very uncomfortable, even if they do look cute, let's face it, or a new piece of clothing that may not last. So that is my pitch for splurging on wines. If you don't splurge on wines a lot, you're probably wondering if they're worth it. So I'm going to go over a study I found in the Journal of Wine Economics to talk about that. And yeah, there's a lot of research that says, you know, people might not enjoy expensive wines as much. But I think if you're listening to the show, you are definitely somebody who needs to splurge on wine, even if it's just once. Now, splurge can mean whatever you want. These wines are going to be starting at around $50 and going on up. But I'm going to explain why I think it's important to splurge on these wines, because they are super unique and they're these wines that you need to have once in your life. So I'm going to give the why splurge. I also want to add the caveat that there were so many more wines that I wanted to add to this, but there's just not going to be enough time. Maybe you guys will have to let me know. If you think that we should do another splurge podcast at some point, maybe we'll do it again next year at this time, or maybe some other time this year, let me know. Just drop me a note and we'll see about doing another one. But this is a pretty good list. I've got 10 wines that I think are splurge worthy. Now, another thing that you can splurge on, which is really not that much of a splurge, is joining Patreon. If you want to join the Patreon community, a lot of you have been like, where did all the old episodes of the podcast go? They have gone behind Patreon. That's a perk of Patreon now. You know, Patreon has really developed into this amazing, thriving community. We're doing hangouts, we're doing classes, things like that, free classes. And some of the patrons have started to get together and form tasting groups in real life. So that is going to be an initiative for the second half of the year. And so if you are somebody who wants some community where you are, that is going to start to happen too. We're all sort of like-minded, and it's a great opportunity for us to get together in real life instead of just being online, although we do a lot of stuff online as well, because I can't be everywhere, even though I would love to be. Let's thank the patrons. The patrons keep me going. Without Patreon, I could not keep doing the podcast and do fun shows like this. So hopefully you will consider joining. You can join for as little as $2 a month or $21 a year. So let's just thank our patrons now. Leslie B, JC, Tim B, Leslie C, Alexandru E, Elizabeth H, Joe M, Chris, Cynthia C, Nick, Megan L, Sally C. Hey, Sally in Australia. Maddie A. Petra S. Lauren O. Lisa K. Silvio C. Jeffrey D. And Roy C. Thank you guys so much. It's so exciting to have you in the community. And I'm looking forward to getting to know all of you because I try my best to get back to people. Of course, now that tax season is over, I will have a little bit more time to get back to people and do more fun community events. It really does take so much time to do taxes, doesn't it? Pain in the butt. Anyway, here's what I want to say. If you don't splurge on wine, I said this already, but like I found this study in the Journal of Wine Economics, and I'm going to quote from it because it's kind of interesting. So they say there's always this question of should I splurge? Shouldn't I splurge? And there is some evidence that people might not enjoy really expensive wines. So I'm going to address this first. I'm going to quote this. Okay. So our main finding is that individuals who are unaware of the price do not, on average, derive more enjoyment from more expensive wine. In fact, unless they are experts, please remember this part, they enjoy more expensive wine slightly less. That's so nuts to me. Our results are robust to the inclusion of individual fixed effects, are not driven by outliers, yada, yada. These findings raise an interesting question. Is the difference between the ratings of experts and non-experts due to an acquired taste, or is it due to an innate ability, which is correlated with self-selection into wine training? Investigating this further would be a fruitful avenue for future research. They conclude by saying, unless they are experts, individuals on average enjoy more expensive wine slightly less. Our results suggest that non-expert wine consumers should not anticipate greater enjoyment of the intrinsic qualities of a wine simply because it's expensive or it's appreciated by experts. Look, maybe you've never had a really expensive wine. Maybe I'm going to convince you to do it. Maybe you have had one. There's a couple of things that you have to know. Don't just splurge on something because someone else says it's good. You need to know, especially if you're going to put down some cash, that you actually like that wine. So if you don't like Riesling, don't go out and buy a Grand Cru Alsace Riesling because you're not going to like that. I mean, you might like it more than a regular Riesling, but you're not going to like it and be like, oh my gosh, now I'm obsessed with Riesling, likely. If you don't like Cabernet Sauvignon, don't go investing in a Left Bank Bordeaux or a Napa Cab. That just doesn't make sense. So figure out what you like first, and then you can splurge. The other thing I'm going to say about this expert versus non-expert, and I know you're listening to the show and you're thinking, I'm not an expert. Well, guess what? I think according to this study, if you're sitting here listening to this wine podcast, you sought out a wine podcast, you're listening to a wine podcast, you're hanging out with me, walking your dog or going on your commute or whatever right now, you have self-selected into what I would say is like the open-minded semi-expert category, because although you may not know that much, you're totally open to the idea of new wines. And I think that if you are in the phase of exploration, I know so many of you personally, you know, I know who listens to this show, and I know that you're intellectually curious. I think as long as you follow the guidelines of buying a higher tier wine of something you already like and making sure that it's stored properly and all that kind of stuff, I really do think that we are the group that's going to derive a lot of enjoyment out of these more expensive wines. And if you're like a total novice, it may not be time to do that, but many of you are not total novices. So I'm going to give you this list of 10 wines based on my experience. It's based on, in the beginning, me trying less expensive versions of these wines and then saying, gosh, I think this is really good, but maybe it could be better. And I have seen a measurable difference in the more expensive stuff. You know, these are wines that I know when I splurge on them, they are 100% worth it. The number one wine that if you are going to make a splurge, there will be an enormous, enormous leap in quality is Bourgogne Burgundy in both red and white. Red Burgundy is Pinot Noir. White Burgundy is Chardonnay. Now, Burgundy would like us to start calling them Bourgogne. So I'm going to try, such force of habit, I'm going to try to call it Bourgogne. When I say that, that means Burgundy. Why is this worth the splurge? Pinot Noir is very dependent on terroir, on the land, on the aspect of all of these things. And there's a giant difference between Bourgogne, red Bourgogne, and everywhere else on earth that makes wine from Pinot. There is also a huge difference between Burgundy sites. And as you go up the ladder in quality, you will find, not all the time, but you will find, if you get a good producer, way, way better wines. And things that you never even imagined you would taste in wine can be attainable in really, really great Bourgogne. This also goes for the Chardonnay, the white Bourgogne. These grapes are highly dependent on terroir. Nothing tastes like a white Bourgogne, and nothing tastes like a red Bourgogne, even if they are Pinot Noir or Chardonnay. It is so distinctive. So if you are going to have a wine, you're going to invest in a wine, splurge on a wine, you want to see what a big difference is, Bourgogne is the one to do it. That's the number one. Let's talk about red Bourgogne, Pinot. You need to find a style that is going to fit what you like and where you are in terms of your Pinot Noir style. There's something for everyone in Bourgogne. Let me give you some guidelines and I'll give you some pricing too. Bolder Pinots. These are wines that have more fruit. They have more earthiness. They definitely have more tannin. They're going to be longer lived. If you wanted to age these wines, Pinot is not a great ager. I think it does better within about 10 years. But these bolder wines, generally speaking, you're talking about more on the 10 plus year side. There's a few villages. There's the Alos Corton Village or Premier Cru. And you can go back and listen to the Côte de Nuit episode or the Côte de Beaune episode, and you'll hear me describe these things in detail. But they've got Premier Cru, they have Village wines. Those would go under Alos Corton. Another bolder Pinot is from the Côte de Beaune Pommard. They've got amazing Premier Cru, the Claudie Epinot and Le Rougien. Also, just general Pommard is absolutely delicious and it's bolder and richer. So if you're kind of used to the New World style, Pommard is a good bridge to Burgundy. Gevrey Chambertin, the village of just Gevrey, or you can do the Premier Cru. It could just say Gevrey Chambertin Premier Cru. Clos Saint-Jacques is a very prestigious Premier Cru. So all of these places that I just mentioned, Pommard, Gevrey Chambertin, and Alos Corton Village wines are going to start at $50. So yes, this is a splurge. This is just for Village wines. Now, some of the Village wines from great producers are going to be more expensive and they're going to be excellent. But for a splurge wine, $50 is going to get you some really excellent Village wines that are going to give you a sense of what you can get as you ladder up. Now, 50 is the starting point. The Premier Cru are way over $50 and they can go up to thousands of dollars. If you want something that's got a little bit more depth and some interesting notes, this is kind of step two in Burgundy. Incense and Indian spice box, floral earth notes with some forest floor, licorice smoke, and more silky textures. Vin Romanée would be a good example of that. So Vin Romanée also has the most expensive wines in the world. Romanée Conti or Le Romanée, La Tâche, these are single vineyard Grand Cru, and those are $10,000 a bottle. That's not what I'm talking about. But the Village wines of Vin Romanée start at $70. Again, we're talking about splurge wines. We're talking about wines that are expensive. So that is the basic Village wines. And these wines are delicious. Again, a measurable difference between just a regular Bourgogne and Vin Romanée. So look for these Village wines if you want to see this next level of difference between Burgundy or Bourgogne and Pinot. Lighter styles, elegant styles. If you really, really want to get into Pinot in a very significant way, these styles are more acidic. They are very pretty and very floral. I find them a little bit harder to access. You really have to work sometimes to find the flavors in these, but sometimes they are beautifully perfumed. It depends on the producer. Chambol Musanie would be a good example. And those Village wines start at $50. So sad, these wines used to start at $35. So it has gotten so much more expensive. But if you go in with a friend or you decide that you're going to splurge on one of these wines, these are the communes to look for. Make sure that you pay attention to the producer and the producer style. I can't list every producer, especially for Bourgogne. Just read up, because before you plunk down a chunk of change. You got to make sure that it's somebody who is making wine in the style that you like. I don't usually say look at the reviews and things like that, but try to see if there is one producer who you're thinking about buying where a bunch of people who are professionals say that it's good. This wouldn't be a time for like Vivino. It wouldn't be a time for crowdsourcing. This would be more of a time for experts because you're going to be spending a lot of money. For these wines, when we're thinking about splurge wines, they're things that we want to enjoy now. So Village wines only need about 5 years of aging, maybe 3 to 5 years. Premier Cru, 8 years. So again, those Premier Cru probably would be more like $90 or $100. And if you want to go for the Grand Cru, they can age for 20 years. You are, especially with the bolder Pinots, you're going to have to wait on those. I'm thinking more when we say splurge wines, things like I got my tax refund, I want to get something I can drink now. You might want to hold something, but for the drink now stuff, Village and some of the Premier Cru is probably where you're looking. Red Bourgogne is fantastic. White Bourgogne is outstanding too. This is worth the splurge because this is a totally different Chardonnay. The flavors are going to depend on commune. I'm going to give you the top three communes or the top three village, but this is unlike any other Chardonnay on earth. There's savory flavors, there's acidity, and there's this mineral note and artistry in the wines you cannot find anywhere else in any other Chardonnay region in the world. The higher echelons of these wines, and I have not had the top tier, which would be Le Monrachet, which apparently is like a transformative sensory experience, but those wines start at $400. So no, these wines are truly magical, even at a really good Village level or a Premier Cru level, which some of us can spring for, fantastic wines. So all the white Burgundies that are really worth splurging on come from three communes in the Côte de Beaune. The first one is Mersault. Mersault has no Grand Cru vineyards, but it's considered one of the best spots for Chardonnay on earth. It is savory and rich, and it's nutty. This is kind of what the California style was based off of, because Mersault has more oak, not over-the-top oak, but you will get noticeable oak in some of these wines. Vanilla, the Premier Cru here are excellent. There are some top Premier Cru, Le Charme, Le Genevrier, and Le Perrier. Premier Cru produce Mersault's best wines. They can also be very expensive, but the Village wines that just say Mersault are great. And these wines are consumed within 5 to 10 years. It should be not so hard to be able to find a wine that's about 5 years old. They're expensive. So even the Village wines, like Domaine de Montil, is $80. Comte Lafond, which is very famous, $161 just for a Village wine. They can be super expensive. Pouligny Monrachet is the next one. Now, this shares the most famous vineyard for white on earth, Le Monrachet, with Chassagne Monrachet, which is the next one. And this is just ideal terroir for Chardonnay. The Village wines are great. The Grand Crus are considered the best whites in the world by many. There's two Premier Cru that people really talk about, Le Calaret, Le Pucet, and they're right across from Le Monrachet. They are very expensive, but there's other great Premier Cru. Les Combettes is one of them, Les Demoiselles. This is really considered to be some of the best Chardonnay in the world. And they're on the other end of the spectrum from Mersault. If you didn't like what I said about Mersault being oaky, Pouligny is lighter. It's more acidic. It's tighter. It's got more white floral, steely, minerally notes. It's much more full-bodied than a Chablis, but it still is minerally and saline, and it's got this backbone of acidity, still with some fruit, with some nut notes, really lovely. But Pouligny Village wines are expensive. I mean, they start at around $95. So Jean Chartron, $95. A bunch of them are around $100. Cazay, Henri Belot, Jacques Carillon, $100, and Domaine Le Fleuve, which is super famous, $170 just for Village wines. So depending on your budget, that's just to give you a parameter of what Pouligny has. Chassagne Monrachet is a style between Mersault and Pouligny. This is my favorite Village wines. I'm really sad that I can't afford it anymore. It used to be $35, which was a splurge for me. But now they start at around $80. It is really difficult to get these, but these are more medium bodied. So again, somewhere between that Pulini style of the steely salinity and high acidity, this is more medium bodied. It has the mineral notes of the Pulini, but it's more floral with pear and nutmeg, even some hazelnut notes, which was always my favorite. I love hazelnut in a wine. With some time, they become honeyed and rich and more powerful. So whereas Pulini becomes more like honeysuckle, Chassagne becomes more like honey. The Premier Cru are excellent. They are less money than Meursault and Pulini. And you've got Morgeau as a top Premier Cru. Le Calaret is another top Premier Cru. But even the Village wines, $140, $170, $80. I was just looking at some of the better producers. You can age these wines. All of these Chardonnays will age from 8 to 20 years if you have a Grand Cru. A Premier is 5 to 15 years, and a Village is about 3 to 8 years. That's for Chassagne, Pulini, and also from Meursault, although Meursault doesn't have any Grand Cru. While we're in Burgundy, I'm also going to give you a much more affordable splurge, and that is Chablis. If you love white wine and you love these more steely versions, like if what I was saying about Pulini kind of grabs you here, Chablis has less fruit and a skinnier body than Pulini, but the Chablis Grand Cru, which are just 2% of the appellation, are pretty similar, actually, to the wines of Pulini Monrachet. And Chablis is part of Bourgogne, but it is off in the north. It's got more in common soil-wise with Champagne, frankly, and for a while it was a part of Champagne. The Grand Cru are a little different. So they are on this very protected side on the right bank of the river Saronne. It covers a hill on the southwest slope. They're on this Kimmeridgian limestone, which you'll find again in Champagne, also in Sancerre in the Loire Valley. They go up to about 820 feet or 250 meters. There's marl, so that's clay and limestone, tiny oyster fossils from the old sea that used to be here. The wines are like white Burgundy, the steelier versions of white Burgundy, but they are more like almond and dried fruit, and they're flinty. They've got this flinty note, like when you take two rocks and bang them together to try to make a spark. That is flint, and that is very typical of Chablis Grand Cru. Now, the Grand Cru are perfectly balanced. They are amazing. They have acidity and minerality and flavor, and you cannot find that anywhere else in the world. A Grand Cru Chablis is worth the splurge because you can't find anything else that tastes like this. And they are a relative bargain compared to any other Burgundy, and really, frankly, a lot of Chardonnay that's just out there on the market, expensive Chardonnay. The crazy thing about the Grand Cru is that by Bourgogne law, Chablis has one Grand Cru, and it's on this hill, but there's seven separate sites that are considered one Grand Cru. Now, Chablis actually likes this because if each of the seven sites had its own Grand Cru, that would mean that Chablis could not be on the label. But because it is part of the Chablis Grand Cru, Chablis can be on the label, and that means that we can recognize it even if it says Le Clos, which is the largest and best known Grand Cru, or Valmour, or Blanchot, or any of the others, right? So they all have different nuances. Le Clos is the best known Chablis Grand Cru. It has cinnamon notes and honeyed notes. It is absolutely delicious. These wines, like I said, are a relative bargain. So if you want to get a Grand Cru from Lower Burgundy, from Pulini Monrachet, Chassagne Monrachet, White Bourgogne, you are going to have to pay way over $150, just starting price. But top producers, I just looked up some of the stuff on Wine Searcher. Christian Moreau, $130 for a Grand Cru. Jean-Marc Brocard, $108. Domaine Pinson, $89. Now, for the really expensive ones, there's two producers, Vincent Davison, $350. Those are really considered the top, top wines, along with Francois Ravenot. Those wines start at $1,200. Ravenot has gone way, way above and beyond everybody else in price. But Davison and Ravenot are different styles because they actually put a significant amount of oak on those wines. So you might not even like those styles. You might be better off with Domaine La Roche for $125. That is a Chablis Grand Cru. A big splurge, but this is the best of the best in Chablis, so a relative bargain. am sure that as I am talking about all of these fantastic wines to splurge on, you are thinking, I am going to do it. I'm going to buy one of these spectacular wines and I'm going to try it. I deserve it. It's a treat to myself. Some people want to buy a new shirt. I want to buy a great bottle of wine. And guess where you can do that? WineAccess.com/normal. You can get on the website that way and check out their store page. Not only are you guaranteed amazing producers, but you will also get the story behind each wine. You are transported with every glass. So this podcast will get you into the wines that you need and Wine Access will close the deal. And if you love the wines are often available for repurchase. So it's like a collection of their greatest hits and then also new wines to discover. Free shipping is included when you spend $150 or more. And with their buy and hold feature, you can have up to 30 days to reach that $150 free shipping threshold. So if you decide to splurge on one special bottle and it's $150, guess what? You get free shipping on that. If you get multiple bottles and it adds up to $150, you are set to go. Free shipping that way too. Wine Access is an amazing partner. Please support them as they support this show and get on those splurge wines today. Wine Access has everything from really high tier wines to basic everyday wines. WineAccess.com/normal for the wine club, which does have some excellent and amazing wines, $150 for six bottles four times a year that I pick out, or go to WineAccess.com/WFMP, get into the site and check out their amazing wines that you can splurge on today. Also, don't forget, if you want back episodes of the podcast, you can join the Patreon community. If you want a community of fantastic people who actually get together live, go to patreon.com/WFMP. Support the podcast. This is how this podcast is able to survive. Between Wine Access and the patrons, I'm able to keep on going. And I hope that you will be part of this awesome and growing community. Join today, patreon.com/wineformalpeople. Now let's get back to the show. We're going to stick in France for a while. A lot of these wines are French. Why? Because most of the really expensive wines come from France and also from the United States. We don't see a ton of super expensive wines that are coming out of Spain or out of Portugal. Italy does have some. There's some Italian on this list. And like I said, I omitted some Italian, although we could do a whole other list of just Italian. Let's talk about Bordeaux. Now, this time, I am going to talk about the right bank of Bordeaux, and I am going to suggest Pomerol. I love the wines of the left bank of Bordeaux, but when I splurge, I kind of, like I said, want the wine now. And those left bank wines have a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon in them, and I got to lay them down. So I go for Pomerol when I have a little extra money because they represent a total hedonistic pleasure, and they're ready so much sooner. So Pomerol's on the right bank. It's a very low-key farming community. It's near Saint-Emilion, which is much more famous. It's so low-key that until the 20th century, it wasn't even known. And then it rocketed to fame with Petrus, and then you had Lepine and Lafleur. They became really highly rated. Robert Parker liked them. They got a big following. But this is just a tiny region that's on a plateau of gravel with some clay and sand. Merlot is like 80% of what's grown here. Cab Franc is the other 15%. There's 5% of Cabernet Sauvignon. But the soil has a lot of iron oxide in it, and the wines have a very distinct flavor as a result of it. This is a great splurge because they don't have to age that long. You could have a Pomerol after 5 years and it will be absolutely delicious. If you wait 8 to 10, it'll be even better. But Merlot is so friendly. These wines tend to be silky and smooth. They're always ready to drink. They'll give you something different every time you drink it, depending on the age of the wine. But it's great young too. They're spicy and they're fruity and earthy. And even young, they're kind of silky. It's just a total crowd pleaser. And the other good thing is that it's a very small region with a small number of producers. So the consistency is great. You really can't go wrong getting a wine from Pomerol. There are very expensive wines. I'm going to give you some reasonable splurges because obviously like Petrus and Le Pen are thousands of dollars a bottle. So I'm talking about things that are like $60, $70. Chateau Roger would be a great example of that. Chateau La Ponte is $60. My favorite, which is somewhere between a splurge and an everyday wine, Chateau Clinet is one of these very expensive wines. It's over $100 a bottle. But they have a lower tier that's called Buy Cliné Pomerol, and it's only about $38. So that's a good, reasonable splurge if you're thinking about it. But Pomerol is great because although I have so much Bordeaux, I love laying like the left bank wines down and letting the tannins sit and tasting them after many years. If I want something now, I'm going for Pomerol. And I think you should too. It's very delicious. Trust me. Sticking in France again, the next two wines are for those of us who are Syrah lovers. So Côte Rôti. I would recommend Hermitage in another show, but we are talking about splurge wines that we want to drink right now. And Hermitage needs a lot of time, much like those left bank wines that have high tannins. Côte Rôti is the northernmost appellation in the Northern Rhone. It's a continental climate, very, very steep slopes. They go up to 1,150 feet, 330 meters, south, southeast facing slopes. There's decomposed granite soils that gives the wines great acidity. The Appellation is not that big. We did a whole show on it if you want to go back and listen to the Côte Rôti show. But not that many places are permitted to make the wine, and only certain plots within the communes are allowed to make Côte Rôti. There are some very famed sites. So you have the Côte Brune, the Côte Blonde, the Brown, the Blonde, and within the Côte La Mouline, La Landon, La Turque. These are very famous sites. The terroir matters here. So depending on where you grow these, the Syrah, it's going to matter. Also, Côte Rôti is not just Syrah in many cases. It is allowed to have up to 20% Viognier. Most producers only use about 5% for aroma and texture. But the Viognier adds such a spectacular amount of flavor. A little tiny bit packs a punch and makes the Syrah so much better and more interesting. Much like Pomerol for a lot of the 20th century, Côte Rôti was completely underdeveloped. Nobody was really making anything interesting. And then Etienne and Marcel Guigal, who are big, big names now, were responsible for the renaissance of Côte Rôti. And again, we have to give credit to Robert Parker, the famous American critic, who also recognized that these wines were really fantastic. These are always one of the top splurges. Burgundy and Côte Rôti, Pomerol, I mean, these are really, actually everything on this list is sort of a splurge for me. But Côte Rôti, for a Syrah lover like me, if you are a Syrah lover too, this is the wine for you. Because Hermitage is amazing, but if you want something to drink now or soon, Côte Rôti is delicious. It has those intense Syrah notes like the bacon fat and the lavender and black olive and pepper and black plum. It is delicious. And then it also has these floral aromatics, peachy aromatics that come from the Viognier. But it can be ready after 6 or 8 years, and they're already holding it for a few years before they release it. You don't need 15, 20 years on a Côte Rôti to be able to drink it. It's a totally complete wine. It has a unique flavor. If you love Syrah, you must consider Côte Rôti as a splurge. You know, it's going to vary based on where the grapes are grown. So if it's Côte Blonde, which is lighter sand and limestone, it's going to be fruitier and softer, and they'll be ready earlier and often blended with Viognier to add some of that depth and floral peachy notes. Côte Brune, on the other hand, has these very heavy iron soils, and they generally don't blend Viognier in, and those wines need more time and they have more tannin. Now, I'm going to give a shout out to Trish and Jeannie. Trish is the owner of the Allegria Wine Room in Logan, Ohio. So if you happen to be there, go visit her. She has impeccable taste, but she is a patron and also a friend. And she and her wife Jeannie came over when they were in town, and we had the Guigal Chateau d'Ampuy Côte Rôti. I had received a gift certificate, so I didn't pay full price for it, because if you pay full price, it's about $150. We were all in heaven. It was absolutely magical. Some Viognier in it. It was from the Côte Blonde and the Côte Brune and some other sites. Delicious wine. I would buy that wine again. I'm thinking about getting that just so I can lay it down again. That is $150. René Rostang, very famous wine. Côte Rôti from La Landon, a very famous wine, for $169. But you can get the basic Côte Rôti for $70. You can check out Domaine Jean-Michel Gérin from the Côte Rôti La Villière. that's $60. So that's not so bad. And then if you really want to go for it, because you got a huge refund, you can go for the Gigal wines from La Mouline, which is the Cote Blonde, La Landon, or La Turque. These were popularized by Robert Parker back in the day, and they're all around $400. So that is a massive splurge. I think I probably am going to stick with the 60 or 70. But again, great splurge wines, especially for Syrah lovers. And while we are talking about Syrah, I have another Syrah splurge. The Rocks District of Milton Freewater in Walla Walla AVA. Some of it is in Washington, some of it is in Oregon. So the Rocks District of Milton Freewater is a very unique area. It's uniform, it's sloped, and it's covered with basalt, cobblestone, and gravels of varying sizes. And that is from the erosion of the Blue Mountains, and it was deposited in this particular area by the Walla Walla River. A bunch of stones fanned out in what's called an alluvial fan. These cobblestones are heavy on the soil. The soil is incredibly well drained. It's hard to farm. You can't really ride a tractor through it. There isn't a lot of ground cover. So the bare soil with the rocks is going to radiate warmth and heat to give these grapes a lot of ripeness. Now, they are not over the top, but why would you splurge on a Syrah from the Rocks District? Because like what I said about Burgundy and like what I just said about Cote Rôti and similar to what I said about Pomerol and Chablis, you will never taste a wine, especially one from the United States, that shows more unique terroir than this district. The flavors, the aromas, they are so singular. They express themselves so clearly in the Syrah from this area that they are unlike anything on earth. Because of that, it is really important to, I think, to give a try to these wines. They are really, really unique. The flavors are things, they call it the funk, right? So you want to look for a wine from the rocks that has the funk. They always call it that. You don't want one that just says it's from the Rocks District. You want one that calls it earthy or savory or meaty. Briny. Fruit is usually not the first adjective used in describing these wines. They're like iodine, iron, black olives, lavender, dried flowers with black pepper and graphite. And then at the end, you'll get black plum and blueberry. The tannins are not strong. These wines are very special, very unique and delicious. They range from $50 to $100+. My friends at Sleight of Hand who have been on the show, Jerry and Trey, make a fantastic, probably one of the best wines from the Rocks District. Savaya Cellars and Proper is another one making really, really excellent wines. They're all around $75. So that is definitely a splurge. You have to order them directly from the wineries if you're in the US. I'm not sure what the distribution is farther afield, but these are very special wines. Some of the most unique wines in the US, hands down. We go back to France. Sorry, I just can't keep away. But again, a lot of the wines that are more expensive are coming out of France. Champagne. If you like sparkling wine, I need to say this. There is sparkling wine and then there's champagne. And there's champagne and then there's great champagne. We have this image of what champagne is, and they've done a terrible job of talking about the terroir and how it affects the grapes. But let me just say this. If you want a really good champagne, generally, our starting price is around $40 to $50. That's when you're going to start to get better sites, better winemaking, longer aging on the lees. It costs a boatload to make good champagne. You have to do two fermentations. You have to age it on the dead yeast cells on the lees for an extended period of time. More than 5 years is really where you start to see a huge difference in quality. So it's expensive to cellar the stuff for so long, so they are more expensive. Why would you splurge on an expensive champagne? Because champagne, like Bourgogne, you get what you pay for. Bourgogne is exactly that. You get what you pay for. There's not bargains there. You're going to have to pay to get that unique thing. Actually, most of these wines, you can't get a lesser version of it. Champagne, once you get into some of these higher echelons of champagne, the flavors are kind of transformative. You have very, very tiny, fine beads or bubbles. You have these toasty brioche notes. If you've never tasted that in a wine before, that's from long lees aging. Plus the minerality, you can taste that. Same thing I described in Chablis, that mineral, Kimmeridgians, chalk soils make these wines so lively. Some of them are made on heavier soils with clay, so you'll have richer flavors. It depends. There's Pinot Noir, there's Pinot Meunier, there is Chardonnay. So depending on what you get, you're going to find different levels of quality. But for a really good champagne, the cheapest one that I, for splurge wine, Pierre Peters is excellent. That's a grower champagne for $80. Ruinart Blanc de Blanc, one of the best wines I've ever had, starts at $100. Bollinger Grand Annie, this is their tête de cuvée, their best wines, starts at $115, goes up to $200+. So these are some of the more commercial properties. Billicard Saumon, Cuvée Elizabeth, Saumon Rosé, $200. Tattinger, Comté de Champagne starts at $250. It goes up from there. But these wines are, again, depending on how much money you have to splurge, are absolutely transformative. Definitely worth the money. Here's a kind of a ringer. It's not that expensive. This is a lower dollar amount, but I'm going to recommend really excellent top tier Old Vine Zinfandel from California. It is so unpopular with sommeliers. They despise it. I think that's a great reason alone, frankly, just to drink it, just to buck the trend. But, you know, that's kind of my personality. Industry people don't like it. So you have to have a lot of conviction to grow it. And that's why I think we should buy it, because the people that do grow Zinfandel love it. It's a passion project. Zinfandel is not easy to make. It's not easy to manage. It's low reputation. Definitely comes from white Zinfandel. But even those that don't know it, in the 1800s, it was the easiest grape to grow in California and make good wine from during the gold rush. So in the mid-1800s, 1849, 1850, it was the most widely planted red grape in California, and that stayed that way until 1988. The problem for Zinfandel is that people decided that they were going to make it really big and really overripe. And you had the whole no wimpy wines from Ravenswood, which wasn't very expensive. And it started to be described as jammy. The alcohol levels were really high. They put American oak on to add vanilla and char and dill notes and added petite syrah, which gave it some tannin and things like that. But it wasn't really Zinfandel anymore. It doesn't have to be that way. There are some excellent wines out there that are worth trying, and they're worth the splurge. They are not in the style that I just described. They can be really food friendly if they're not picked too late and they're not made in this oaky style. Napa and Sonoma tend to have more tannin. They can be really ripe because of the soil type, because a lot of them grow on hillsides or on clay soils. They are very briary. They are spicy. This is a heritage vine in Napa and Sonoma. So you have some really great producers. Martinelli makes a Russian River Zinfandel. It's $156. So this is not a joke. This is not cheap. William Selyem, $105 for their Zinfandel, for their Russian River Valley Zinfandel. Robert Biale in Napa, the Black Chicken and all of their wines, they really stuck true to Zinfandel. Those wines cost anywhere from $60 to $120. Again, you'd have to order them direct. And then, of course, my very good friends at Knoll Winery, their most expensive wine is $60. So that's a total steal. I know some of you really like Storybook Wine Estates. Those are $45 to $50. Ridge is about $50 for the Pagani Ranch Zinfandel. So there are producers that are making Zinfandel in a more moderated style and from old vines, from vines that are over 100 years old, over 70 years old. And those are going to give you some very interesting flavors. Amador County is another one with shallow soils, higher elevations in the Sierra foothills. Those can creep up in alcohol though. Renwood, my friends at Andes, $60 for the Grandpère Vineyard, which is the oldest Zinfandel vineyard in the U.S. So pretty cool that you can get these wines. They are a splurge, but you know what? Zinfandel is a remarkable bargain versus other reds because it's not popular. And the old vine stuff is really, really good. It's very hedonistic. And I think it's fun to reject what the popular kids like and go your own way. So look, I'm not saying that $60 for a wine isn't expensive, but the Nol Zinfandel is delicious. The Ridge Zinfandel, delicious. So those are more reasonable splurges. Let's get to another white here. If you've listened to the show for a while, you know I love Chateau Neuf de Pape Blanc. We could do Chateau Neuf de Pape Rouge. We could do the red. But the Blanc is another unique wine. It is totally worth the splurge. It's rare. It's super prestigious. It only makes up 7% of what they grow in Chateau Neuf de Pape. And the wines are generally a blend. You can get some very prestigious single varietal wines, mainly of Claret or Roussanne. You would splurge on this because I guarantee you will never taste a fuller, more satisfying white than a Chateau Neuf de Pape Blanc. It is literal heaven in a glass. You almost feel guilty drinking it because it's so good. It's generally, like I said, a blend. Grenache Blanc is the main blending grape, and that is going to be ripening just like Grenache Rouge. It's going to ripen to really high sugar levels, and that is going to give a full body to Chateau Neuf de Pape Blanc. That is why blending in things like Claret and Pique Pôle and Bourbolenc are going to add acidity, and they're going to add some citrus notes and flavors. And then you have Roussanne, which is a really serious and excellent wine and can be made as a standalone in Chateau Neuf. Peachiness and green notes, floral notes, honeyed notes, all of that with this combination of grapes is going to add something to the final wine. So depending on the producer, the terroir, I mean, Chateau Neuf de Pape is huge. So some places are sandy, some places have more clay, some places are hot, some places are cooler. Depending on where the producer is, you're going to get a different style. Younger wines tend to be like pear and honeysuckle and Asian pear, yellow apple, and older wines, and the wines can age 10, 20, 10, 15 years, honey, toast, grilled nuts. I will say this, they have lower acidity. There's still acidity, but you'll have lower acidity. They're softer, but there is no better pairing with white fish like halibut or cod, especially in herbed cream sauces or pesto. These wines go really well with porcini mushrooms. Anything in an herbal preparation, white meat, grilled white meat, all of these things, fantastic with Chateau Neuf de Pape Blanc. They can be expensive. So you have Domaine La Baroche, which is $175. Chateau de Beaucastel, $100. But Chateau Le Neuf is $75. I love their Rouge and their Blanc. So there is a bit of a range for Chateau Neuf de Pape Blanc. Just make sure that you get a good producer. And you will be spending some money. Again, splurge wines, totally worth it. Okay, so I had a really, really hard time deciding whether I was going to add Alsace Riesling or should I do Barbaresco or Barolo. Brunello di Montalcino is my last one. It is worth the splurge. You're never going to taste Sangiovese in this form. You're going to be hard-pressed to find a wine that drinks so well with lots of age but can also be delicious in the near term. This is one of the most famous age-worthy wines. They're expensive. Why are they expensive? All these splurge wines are expensive because they have unique terroir. There's subzones, there's different altitudes, different microclimates. The wine is 100% Sangiovese, which you really don't have anywhere else. You have that in Vino Nobile a little bit, but these wines are aged for a minimum of 4 years before release, including at least 2 years in oak and a minimum of 4 months in the bottle. Reservas are actually the longest aged Italian wines. Their requirement is 5 years, minimum of 2 years in barrel, 6 months in bottle. And making these wines from these ideal plots, some of them combine stuff from different sites, the cooler north and the warmer south, plus all of the aging. These producers do charge a lot for the wines, but if you like to hold wines, they can also live for 20 to 25 years. And they don't taste like anything else on earth. They are silky, but they're acidic, fruity and earthy, cherry, savory herbs, woodsy forest floor notes. And like there's a lighter tannin that comes with that mellowing of age, because remember, they're not released until they've aged for a long time. The traditional styles are probably a little lighter in fruit and higher in acidity. Usually they're all about 14, 15% alcohol, so that's not going to change. The body will be there. Modern styles are more tannic. They often have more oak. So there is something for everyone. The modern styles have a lot of fruit. They can be ready to drink earlier. as long as you can have the balance against the tannin. Vintage is very important with Brunello, so watch that before you buy. Actually, all these wines, vintage is pretty important. Fantastic wines, they can start at around $65 just for a basic Brunello, Silvio Nardi, La Potazzine, Fattoria dei Barbi. These all start at $65. Now, if you get the single vineyards, now you're talking about $100, $150, $200. Padaletti is a classic example, $70 for the base tier wines. And then again, you can go on up and on and on. These wines are definitely worth the splurge because, like I said, they've been aged already by the time you get them. And a lot of them are ready to drink. You can certainly lay them down, but they're delicious. I could say the same thing about Barbaresco. I'm sorry that I couldn't include that. I thought about Riesling from Alsace or Mosel. I thought about Tarazi. Actually, Oregon Chardonnay was on my list too. So we'll have to include those in our next splurge podcast. But this list is really the ones that if you've got some extra money, I would think about these. If you love reds, we've got some stuff for you. We love sparkling. Obviously, champagne is the way to go. And there's a lot of whites here too. I hope this gave you an idea of what to do with your tax refund if you did get one. And if you didn't, at least maybe you can think forward about, you know what, those would be wines that I would like to have in the future. So I am going to keep my eye out for them and I'm going to put them on my list of things that I should splurge on because Elizabeth has said that they are worth it. And I guarantee, I promise you, I've had all of these wines, not all the producers, but I've had all of these wines and they've all wowed me. And this list, like I said, comes from personal experience. So I hope that you will trust me on this and go with your gut, though. Go with the thing that you like. If you like more Merlot-based wines or Bordeaux, you're going to go for Pomerol. If you like things that are softer and rounder, you might go for the Zinfandel. Just go with whatever you like. I think there's something for everyone here. These wines are all food-friendly. Most of these are going to need a little bit of decanting. You start at a 20 minutes and then keep trying them and see when they're ready for you, right? Decanting is not a perfect science. And then just enjoy them. Have some light food or have a nice meal with them and enjoy the splurge. Guess what? You deserve it. I know you deserve it. Buy the wine. Have a great experience. Have a memorable time with this amazing bottle and enjoy yourself. And we'll do this again if you guys like the show. So definitely give me feedback. And with that, this has been another episode of Wine for Normal People. Thank you so much for listening and we'll catch you next time.